Morning, everyone. God is amazing, isn't he? In that we have had someone come and share with us about poverty and need, and I have to follow by talking about money, possessions, and wealth. It seems quite grotesque in a way, but God's timing is amazing. We're starting a new preaching series called Get Real, and we'll be delving into the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, I must admit, my previous forays into Ecclesiastes, I've seen it as quite a bit of a challenge. At times, the writer of the book could be argued to be fairly miserable as they describe the meaninglessness of living without God. One might come to a position where they just feel that the writer is sort of venting their spleen, getting it off their chest, or having a rant. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I just like having a rant, muttering away, and simply getting my frustrations vocalized. Sometimes when I'm at work, that filter that is supposed to be there evaporates, and I actually say what's on my mind. Sometimes at home, Sandy will say the filter's completely off at home and I say whatever I want to. And maybe even sometimes in church, the filter comes off and people get a glimpse of what's really bugging me. Somehow, I can channel my inner Basil Fawlty and really say what I'm thinking. And it's fairly clear that the writer, as we'll find out this morning, is mulling over how they see it as far as particular matters are concerned. They're looking at it from a worldly view, as they often consistently refer to the evils under the sun. The good news is we're able to consider these concerns and worries in the assurance that God in our lives makes a difference, and that readjusts how we outlook on life. So we're going to read from Ecclesiastes from Chapter 5, verse 8. I think it's on page 673, your Bibles, and we'll be going through to the end of chapter 6. So a long reading, but really important to go through it all. If you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, don't be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. Wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners. Wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there's nothing left for them to inherit. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain, since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. This is what I've observed to be good. It's appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, find satisfaction in their toilsome labour under the sun during the few days of life God has given them. But this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. I have seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavily on mankind. God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor so that they lack nothing their hearts desire. God doesn't grant them the ability to enjoy them, and strangers enjoy them instead. This is meaningless, a grievous evil. A man may have 100 children and live many years, yet no matter how long he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and doesn't receive proper burial, I say a stillborn child is better off than he. It comes without meaning, it departs in darkness, and in darkness its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has more rest than does that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, but fails to enjoy his prosperity, do not all go to the same place. Everyone's toil is for their mouth, yet their appetite's never satisfied. What advantage have the wise over fools? What do the poor gain by knowing how to conduct themselves before others? Better what the eye sees than the roving of the appetite. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Whatever exists has already been named, and what humanity has been known. No one contend with someone who is stronger. The more the words, the less the meaning. And how does that profit anyone? Who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days they pass through like a shadow? Who can tell them what will happen under the sun after they're gone? Now, I did feel that we see the writer this morning in Ecclesiastes sort of giving us this sort of tale about wealth and possessions. But I did think I would use the well-worn knowledge of such matters and go to Google this morning and find out what the world's got to say about possessions and money. And I found out that Bjorn and Benny, actually, some of the best philosophers of our time. I mean, it's incredible. If you go to Google, you can find anything. And I just thought it was a simple pop song that they wrote. But apparently it's not. It goes into some detail. Somebody has written an article saying, what does Money, Money, Money by ABBA mean? It says it's one of their most iconic songs, encapsulating a unique blend of catchy tunes and profound, profound storytelling. Despite its upbeat and glamorous sound, the song delves into the stark realities of economic disparities and the pursuit of financial stability. It goes on, and this goes on for about 3 or 4 pages, but it uses money, money, money as a vehicle for society commentary, critiquing the materialistic values that dominate society. The song encourages listeners to reflect on the role of money in their lives and consider the ethical implications of the relentless pursuit of wealth. And I thought it was about someone going to, where is it, Monaco? Las Vegas or Monaco, and win their fortune in a game. Their life would never be the same. Wow, it just shows you. You know, I was really moved by Your Age service a couple of weeks back. Really felt God's spirit in that meeting. And when everyone was asked what their perfect gift would be, I imagine that we would get some wild answers, such as a Lamborghini, a new house, jewellery perhaps, or the latest running shoes from Nike. But it was incredible that the majority of gifts that people wanted were matters such as time, family around them, health. Possessions and wealth appeared to be really low down the list. So perhaps I'm preaching to the converted this morning on a subject that doesn't resonate with you about wealth and possessions. Or does it? I'm sure that there must have been one point in our lives when we have craved just a little bit more money than we had. When anyone used to say to me that money doesn't bring happiness, I used to say to them, it would be nice to know from experience. The difficulty is that over recent years, I've found that some of my favorite films or television series have involved characters that really do confirm that the pursuit of money is a really bad thing. I wonder if any of you have heard of the name of a character, Logan Roy. Sky done a series over the last few years called Succession. And I was fascinated by this story of a global multimedia mogul who, after encountering health problems, begins considering who might take over the family business. Personally, I found it so hard to warm to any of the characters who all seem to be driven by this love of power, wealth, or both. And the example that their father has set them is not the best example at all. And when we start to look at the warnings of the writer of Ecclesiastes, we start to see that wealth and possession of all we might desire is not as helpful as we might have expected. Does money make you happy? What does it actually do? If you have an unhealthy love for money, it really does become clear fairly early on that we never have enough. There always appears to be this hunger for more. Part of my work over the years has required me to deal with planning applications from some very wealthy people who live in ridiculously large estate houses, manor houses. I've had discussions with applicants who've shared their aspirations to extend their properties, to build detached outbuildings as they literally have nowhere to store their increasing collection of custom sports cars. The absolute necessity to enclose their outdoor swimming pool because of the recent inclement summers in the UK. The fact that they really can't possibly be expected to live reasonably without the larger boot room, the snooker room, and the expanded library, which will also house some of their art collection. One of the Rockefellers once said, when asked which million he most enjoyed making, he said, "The next one." In the end, there is the inevitable danger of the wealth dominating your life, becoming your master, and enslaving you. And also, the more wealth, the increase of dependence. Whether we like it or not, in society, if you have money, people want to know you. People ingratiate themselves with you. They want to be part of the party, part of the gang. They'll work hard to find a way into your circle. Anyone remember a film many, many years ago? I think it was in the 80s. Where two business owners in stocks and shares use Eddie Murphy as a streetwise guy to swap places with a successful trader just to see how they both get on. And suddenly the trader, with all his trappings and money taken away, finds that somehow the wide circle of friends had deserted him as well. We only need to look at the story of the prodigal son and how his friends were nowhere to be seen when the money ran out, and he was eating with the pigs. Verse 12 of the reading tells us, "The abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep." And what does this mean? Now, surely, financial security would definitely be one of those things that would result in a good night's sleep. I'm sure there are many of us, at some point in our life, have had sleepless nights worrying about how the bill was going to be paid that month, whether we were going to have about enough money for something that is pretty important in our lives. But the other way? I'd love to know whether abundance of wealth made me sleep more or less than a complete lack of wealth or possessions. But I certainly think there's an argument that more money requires more consideration about where to invest that money, where to bank that money. It might bring more responsibility for dependents, greater administration of assets, more complex management of the money. I've certainly noticed in my work when dealing with businesses that have expanded very quickly how they wrestle with the worry of how and when to take the company to the next level. I recall speaking to one businessman, a brewery owner, you won't be surprised to know. And they remarked about how the business plan had really just originally just been a big hobby that had got out of hand. They'd enjoyed making beer, and whilst they were happy that many people liked their beers, it brought with it this stress of upscaling the business to meet the demand, fretting over whether to stick to the product or adapt it and diversify. Before long, the hobby was giving him sleepless nights. The desire to upscale mixed with the fear of the abundant things that he had to worry about. So does it pay to be wealthy? If we're doing a cost-benefit analysis, how does it all measure up? Do the benefits outweigh the costs? What does wealth have to offer to you? Well, unfortunately, wealth doesn't offer you respect. I'm going to give examples of two types of people, and you may be one, you may be the other. Are you the person who was brought up to treat money with great care? Perhaps you didn't have much money, so you saved. Saved that which you gained for a rainy day, but you never quite want to spend it when it gets to that rainy day. There's no impetuous buying of things, no wasting of money. Or perhaps you're someone who just treats money with reckless abandon. As soon as it's in the account, it's straight out again. You're willing to take a risk with investing it or spending it on something rash. Unfortunately, neither route protects you from that money being wiped out or lost. History is littered with people who've lost money in both situations due to matters both within and outside of their control. This might involve investment companies crashing. Who knows? Huge commercial successes like Freddie Laker, many years ago, literally lost their fortune within 12 months. Gerald Ratner. Who remembers Gerald Ratner? High street jeweler. Huge success. Every shopping center in every city had a Ratner's. And he went from hero to zero, mainly because of an off-the-cuff remark at a company event where he indicated that the quality of his jewelry was, let's say, not particularly great. I won't use the word that he did. So, is the writer telling us that possessions and wealth must be avoided at all costs? When a financial gift from a kindly relation is presented to us, should we run to the hill saying, please, please, not me, give it to someone else? The writer says, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. The danger is the love of wealth can consume, it can dictate our lives. It can become everything and all under the sun. But that's in a life without God. Money and life can be a gift from God. Let's be honest. There's that piece in there this morning which tells us that in the long run, if we chase after wealth, we gain nothing. When the balance sheet of our life's made up, the profit line always reads zero, doesn't it? Nil return. When we think of it, it's obvious. We come into the world with nothing, not even a stitch of clothing. And when we die, we take nothing with us. There may well have been lots of money passing through hands in those intervening years. But at the end of it, we take nothing with us. Surely, however, there must be some benefits. Well, if you're wealthy, perhaps you can afford to think of having a large family surrounding you. It does seem to me that those that chase money also say that the one thing that they crave is a settled and a happy family. You know, I've often mentioned about my dad. So many years I struggled with his reasons for pushing me when I was at secondary school. Always wanting me to do well. Always saying, do your homework. Please just get on and do your homework. Stop messing around, Rob. Stop going out and kicking the football around. Come on, get in and get working. And it was always ever and only because he wanted me to be safe, financially secure. Nothing more, nothing less. His inherent instinct was to ensure If there was anything to be done to limit the worries of life that might come my way, he would work hard to ensure that those times would be limited. Unfortunately, it was when I was 16 or 17, I didn't want to hear that message. And it's only when I look back on it in later years, I realised the love from that man. Long life. Wealth brings you long life. Interesting. The sad fact of life is that there is this indisputable connection between health and wealth. The poorer you are, the greater risk to your health. Conversely, if you're wealthy, you can perhaps have that private healthcare package. You can pamper yourself with spa weekends at health farms. You know, I was reading a book by Paul Tonkinson called 26.2 Miles to Happiness. I won't tell you what he was talking about. But he's a comedian, but also a very good runner. And he shared a story about when he was in the middle of a training plan and he received a call from another comedian friend, Michael McIntyre, who asked him to join him for a weekend at a Scandinavian health spa resort. And he recalls the resort being way out of his financial league, but he'd been invited there by Michael McIntyre. And it was perhaps just a quick pamper fix for those who are slightly less fit, but have a lot of money to waste, such as his friend Michael, who seemingly thought nothing about the thousands of pounds to spend the week there and spent most of the week trying to get round avoiding all the things that are supposed to make you better. Someone once made the mistake of inviting two people to be on a chat show. Vidal Sassoon, who was desperately trying to keep his youth, and Bob Geldof. Vidal spent most of the time showing off about his own personal gym at his house, where he did umpteen push-ups a day, hundreds of lengths of his own personal pool, and also, obviously, his own personal trainer to help him to stay young. After some considerable time of sharing all these things about what was making him so eternally young, Bob Geldof couldn't contain it any longer and just pointed out that most people were just too busy trying to stay alive to be self-obsessed in finding the secret of eternal youth. Wealth can bring you a good education. Sometimes the best education. This in itself could perhaps provide you with contacts through what's often referred to as the old boy network. When I was 11 years old, I passed an exam to go to a popular secondary school in Southampton. I was in the last intake of students before you had to pay to go to the school. I think once they saw me at the school, they thought, we've really got to change this. People are going to have to pay for this now. I remember the arrogance of one of the teachers informing us as students one day that we were already in a better position than lots of other young lads of our age, because purely by the fact that we would be able to be put on our application forms for jobs that we'd been educated at this school. I was appalled by this, but he was probably right. He was probably right. So, it's clear that money does matter. It's the currency that buys us clothes, food, shelter, but does it bring fulfillment in itself? The writer tells us it doesn't. Certainly doesn't bring enjoyment. It's God who gives a personal enjoyment in life. When it says about not satisfying wealth, I'm reminded of what I consider one of the most amazing bits of comedy over the last 30 or 40 years, where after finding the lesser known watch, Dale and Rodney finally get what they've been striving for all those years, to be millionaires. And this wonderful part of the comedy where he's in his big mansion and you just know something's not right. And he finds his way back to Mandela Towers and he's there, sat there on his own. And Rodney turns up and Uncle Albert turn up and he realizes that he wasn't, you know, all those years he was striving for that. And it wasn't what he expected it to be. It wasn't what he expected to be. And there's a sad thing when he says, you know, it was about the chase. You know, I always wanted that extra bit more. And finishes with him walking off into the distance saying, you know, this time next year we could be billionaires. It doesn't bring achievement wealth. What does it say? This too is meaningless. Chasing after the wind. There are countless biographies of rich and famous to prove that. You may have got everything, done everything, gone everywhere, but in the end it's nothing. So I come back. Do we shun gifts, possession, or wealth? No. Because wealth and possessions can be a gift from God. It's what we do with that. You know, this is an incredible truth. When we let God in our lives and fully allow him through his spirit to guide and direct us, then enjoyment will come. And that complete dependence on God means that we know how to deal with our finances and our possessions because they're spirit-led. My dear Nan had little to no money. Her whole life she didn't have possessions, she didn't have riches, and yet I never heard her moan about lack of money. She was extremely generous with the little that she had. My cousin was studying to become a Salvation Army chaplain, and he was on his uppers. She would often send him that small amount of money she had. My mum would worry and tell her, don't do this. You haven't got the money to do this. And yet, bless her, she reminded my mum of the words of the great hymn, Great is Thy Faithfulness. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. God continued to provide for Manan because she had a heart for meeting needs. And this, I believe, is the overarching truth we can take from the message. The writer of Ecclesiastes had deconstructed the myth that money brings enjoyment and fulfillment. But quite clearly, the desire for money and possessions can become the main focus of our life and crowds everything else, and most importantly, God. And when that happens, we're facing a false idol in wealth and riches. As your life becomes skewed where your main focus is acquiring more money, more trinkets, more trappings of success, bring it to God. God is able to work through his spirit in your life. Perhaps today you might feel the message is just for those who have so much wealth and have become greedy and self-obsessed. Your situation this morning may be very different. You struggle each month to pay the bills. Not able to know where the money will come from. The desire and obsession for money that you have is born out of a necessity this morning. You need it to survive. Bring it to God. Lay your troubles before God. He knows your concerns. He knows your needs. There are avenues that the church can point you to this morning to assist with money management. We have details on frontline debt advice. It's a good starting point. If you'd like to talk to someone, please take that opportunity. One of the leadership team will be here to speak to you if you want to this morning. We'll point you in the right direction. No one should feel swamped by the need or desire for money so that it becomes the worry of every waking hour. Bring it to God. You know, I prepared a sermon, and then as I was sort of working my way through it, I came across our website and someone giving a testimony. And it said more perhaps than I could have said or I have done over the last 10 or 15 minutes. That this is someone who's put their trust in God. Recently, I was the victim of a scam which resulted in me losing a considerable sum of money. When I found out, I was shocked, hurt, upset, angry. I felt cheated and violated. After a while, short while, I took this to God and really shared with him all that had happened and how it made me feel. As the days passed, my thoughts on it started to change in unexpected ways. Firstly, I realized it was only money. And in my life, I've had worse things taken from me. My innocence, my childhood, my home, my children, and very nearly my life. But God has been there and has brought me through and helped me overcome. I got a new home, and from there, have been able to develop to the home I have now. My children were restored to me. I have a close, strong relationship with them, and the lost years with them are being replaced by a close relationship with my grandchildren. I'm not financially loaded, and things may be tight for a while, but I will be okay. God has promised to provide my needs. I only need to stand on his promises. He has provided before, and he will again. He's true to his words and his promises. So I'd ask you, perhaps, your prayer this morning, whatever situation you are in with regard to wealth and possessions or the lack of them, that your prayer would be the words of the song which we sang earlier. And I'm just going to pinch them back here. All to Jesus I surrender. Humbly at his feet I bow. Worldly pleasures all forsaken. Take me, Jesus.